You're listening to 42 Macros Pro to Pro Live, hosted by Darius Dale.
Howdy, Team 42. It's your skipper here, Darius Dale, to present another episode of Pro to Pro Live. I'm joined with our friend Jeff Booth, author of The Price of Tomorrow, fantastic book from 2019. I remember when it first came out, it was incredibly controversial. A lot of folks were talking about the Fed, inflation, and ultimately how that stuff will work out. But Jeff, a lot of the stuff you talked about in your book, particularly on the technology side, has played out. And so I just want to say congratulations to you for that. And then just give you the floor to kind of go through your background, you know, why you know, folks should be paying attention to what you have to say.
Thanks, Darius. And great to be here. Great to be on the show. I actually wrote the book. I wrote the book for my kids, actually, is really what happened. So my background is a technology entrepreneur, and really understanding not just technology, but protocols. The internet is actually one of the first protocols people can relate to. Protocols come in layers. We can explore that layer later. And how that would be a system change for most people, measuring that change from the old system. And that's why I went early into the internet, because I realized as an entrepreneur building value in the internet when most people didn't realize what it was. Obviously, there's going to be hype cycles and everything else, but you could create a lot of value for people on and they wouldn't know until they started using the value and created, and you could create great, really great businesses on top of it. And so I went in early in the business. One of those businesses was at one time half a billion dollars. I funded many other businesses. I was very involved and early in that space, including the dot-com collapse, lived through that, a whole bunch of different things. And also learned a lot about myself, a lot about what I did wrong, how the whole system was changing, and how most people misinterpreted what was happening the entire way along. Today, everybody uses the internet like the same people that would never have used the internet just think is ubiquitous, right? The same, the internet in its current form really came into effect in 1989. Yet it was 2007 using the same technology that the iPhone was launched. People think it just all of a sudden, it came out of nowhere when it was a process of trial and error and a whole bunch of things that were building in layers and providing more value. And that value would move throughout society. And so the process of driving my company on top of that, or companies on top of that, led me to wonder and really confuse on why it was. So first, an example, some of the technology that we built early, like 99, 2000, 2001, deep technology, logistics, bin packing algorithms, routing algorithms to be able to solve heavyweight logistics globally. 5-10 years later, the same technology that we would spend $5 million on to be able to develop would be free and better than the stuff. And so I couldn't understand, and that was happening everywhere. Every single company I was involved in, it wasn't just technology companies. The technology was ubiquitous. It was in mining. It was in energy extraction. It was in logistics. It was everywhere. And so I couldn't understand why it was the prices were falling so rapidly and the technology was moving at an exponential rate while most people were measuring it linearly. I couldn't understand why prices weren't falling at an exponential rate broadly, if that was the case. And so I went on a deep dive and I talked to central bankers, politicians and Trudeau and many other politicians globally about the same issue, because it was bugging me. It was really bugging me. And I wrote the book almost as a way to resolve that paradox in my mind and say, what would happen? And by doing so, I had to go deep down the other system, the inflationary. Where did inflation come from? What did that, why did we believe that there had to be inflation in the economy? Where did that come from? What did that look like? And so I laid out a process. What would happen is you had a system change, one driven by technology in the free market that would drive prices lower and lower and lower. And that should be the world we live in. But the world we live in and measure from was from a credit-based system that had to drive inflation or collapse because it couldn't allow a deflationary spiral. So that's what I laid out. And I laid out that in the book because of my experience, my background, and I couldn't, so I couldn't resolve the paradox in my mind. So again, and then when I did, I realized that, oh my God, what's going to happen to society is it gets divided across the world because most people are going to measure this change from the system and give it more strength. So that's my why of why I wrote the book. And it was informed by my background primarily as an entrepreneur and a technology executive trying to provide more value to other people in the world.
No, it's amazing. No, you've really set out and embarked on an incredible journey. You've touched a lot of people. You've changed a lot of the way a lot of people view the world. I mean, I know when I talk to tech PMs, you know, across the global buy side, you know, you're a very important person in terms of how they view the world and productivity growth and gross margins in the business that they cover. So your work is definitely, you know, very influential in certainly in our industry. And obviously, I think it's going to become incrementally more influential across the world. Can you talk a little bit more about this sort of system change? And I'll kind of open the floor to you to speak as much as or little as you want about it. But to me, when I hear the word system change, you know, 9 times out of 10, when you hear that from someone, it's usually very half researched, poorly researched, and kind of half baked. But there are people like yourself, the Neil Howes of the world, that really are, you know, world-class researchers and know what the hell they're talking about. You know, talk to us about how you view this system change and kind of what are the, you know, the beginning steps where, you know, what are the mile markers that we're currently looking for and then what's ultimately the destination?
Yeah. So I'm going to talk in things that are first principles that are true for sure. Right. Yeah. And it's at the base, and then you have to rebuild because a system change, if you can say, it's what I think it is, then that would also, you wouldn't be able to measure it from the other system because a system problem can't be measured or fixed from the system creating the problem.
Yeah.
And so that means if you're inside that system, similar to when Galileo looked up at the stars because he had a telescope, he could look outside the system. Everybody else was looking up at the night sky. And he could see for sure he was right. But because other people didn't have telescopes and they believed that the world was different, it took a long time for that to transition to the breakdown, essentially at that time, the church power over people's beliefs. So if it took a long time for people before us, then it would take a long time right now for us to understand the system change. And the caveat to that is if this really is. And most people pretend it's something else, essentially to sell a product, to sell something, to this is the biggest thing, so that your people can funnel more money into it. And you get a lot of that too, right, in a system change like this. So I'll start with this. The natural state of the free market is deflation.
That's a hot take.
So tell me why that, when I say it's not a hot take, it's a first principle. Because you, like, why are we using this Zoom right now? Because you are forced to provide more value. And if you don't provide more value, then somebody else will. And you use, as a buyer, you only use the things that provide more value.
Sure.
So you could have done this show like a studio. Why do you think most media is dying? You could have done this show with a high cost production and it would take a lot and it wouldn't reach as many people. You chose to do it this way and you opened up a bigger market by doing this. So your actions, both as an entrepreneur or teacher in this case, is competing against everything that was there before. Yeah. Before it was a very small number of studios that told us what the news should be. The technology opened up a way for everybody to be an entrepreneur in this space because it lowered the cost, and you used it. And people that watch this, you follow you because of the value you provide. So every single thing you do as a purchaser chooses more value. You don't choose to get less value ever.
Yeah.
Right.
Sure.
So how could it be in a, and then I said the natural state of a free market is deflation, right? So how could it be that you choose more value and every single person does? And the only way an entrepreneur can win is to deliver more value from what was there before. How could it be prices go? How could that not mean the natural state of the free market is deflation? It has to. It's not a hot take. It's a first principle.
Yeah, fair. Fair.
Okay.
I'm not even saying I agree with it being a hot take. I just, that is a hot take. I don't know that everyone.
Well, it's only a hot take because it sounds so crazy. So most people, when I say that, they nod their head. They actually nod their head because they know through their intuition, it's true because they're a part of it. And then they go directly back. So, but if that's the case, if that's true, and also true in a free market, prices fall to the marginal cost of production or utility value.
That is true.
So what's the marginal cost of production of the code that runs this Zoom? Zero. That's why you have video conferencing for free everywhere.
Yeah.
What's the marginal cost of production of a calculator app? What's the marginal cost of production of a line of code creating other lines of code in AI? Zero. Yeah. So that means prices through the competitive landscape, because everybody will compete. So businesses will embed this because if they don't, they lose, because no one will use this. And then more businesses will compete against that and lower the price. So prices fall to the marginal cost of production or utility value in a free market. That leads to some pretty important observations. You've never lived in a global free market.
That also I agree with.
You've never lived, you believe you have. But you live in a zero-sum game where somebody has to lose for you to win, because it's actually not a free market. It leads to some other important. A credit-based system can't allow what I just described.
Agreed.
It can't allow prices to fall broadly, and because the credit would rise, credit would default, because that deflation would make that credit system default. But we live and measure everything from a credit-based system. So what would happen, and then that credit-based system would have to, so remember, the natural state is deflation, not zero inflation. In that world, if it was the natural state of the free market, every single person on the planet would get richer at an ever-increasing rate, faster and faster and faster, as prices fell to them. And they would win more of a portion of that wealth if they provided more value to somebody else,
yep,
until prices fell again and they were competed with somebody else. And every single monopoly in that world couldn't exist, because the very fact of a monopoly would create a margin that would attract more entrepreneurs with different ideas 100%. To be able to provide more value. So the world that I'm describing has never existed. And we live in a world that has to extract everything I just said and centralize further and further and further. And it doesn't matter where that centralization comes from, the misallocation in a capital, government spending, it all has to be more and more centralized. Because what is it doing? There is no natural rate of inflation in a free market. So it's stealing all of that money. Not just, it's stealing from the productivity rate of the world. It's stealing it, and it has to ever increase inflation. And so people inside that system are looking for assets, are looking for different things that can protect them from their money losing value. and that's what I'm talking about, this zero sum game. And everybody doing that inside that system is actually making that system stronger and themselves weaker in a system that is ripping apart the world. But that's the system change I'm talking about. It's such a dramatic change, but it's actually the change in us understanding it. And then what could resolve what I just described? Because everybody goes to the same news media, the different people, and saying those people are at fault. but you wouldn't vote yourself. You wouldn't vote for to allow the entire system to collapse and live in a free market. You would vote as if we say we would. But if you ripped out all of that abuse and all of that printing money, every bank would fail. Every house would fail. The entire system that we believe in, these make-believe prices, because they're artificially injected to dilute money, and the whole thing would fall.
100%. Just quick interjection. Count those chart on the screen where we show in this third panel, we have global total non-financial sector debt. At most recent count, it was $245 trillion. So I want to say carry that forward at the current growth rate. It's probably somewhere close to $275 trillion. I mean, you're almost talking $300 trillion of debt that's underpinning the entire global financial system as the base layer of money. And of exactly. That's my point. So if you try to have overall system change, you know, you're talking about at a bare minimum, World War III, and bare maximum, maybe a permanent state of conflict. And so I don't think, you know, when I hear these kind of, you know, I'm sure you're quite familiar with them in your line of work, you know, the sort of, you know, the crypto shillers of the world, if you will, they're telling you that we're having this massive system change and it's coming and it's coming down the pipe, but they're not really articulating how disruptive it can be. And I think you are finally, you know, one of the few people that are articulating how disruptive it'll be. So with that in mind, where are we, like, how do we go from current system, $300 trillion of base money, or not base money, but as the base layer of money in the system, to a system where we're actually moving the exact opposite direction to sustain that debt?
Yeah. And so when I say it's way worse than this, the IFF just came out with the current number that's, whether you trust their number or someone else's number, the $348 trillion. Two years ago, the Bank of International Settlements found about $70 trillion off balance sheet that isn't added to that number. Right? How do you find off balance inside a global system that we're all measuring from, that type of money that's off balance sheet? There's an additional $200 trillion of derivatives exposure against $50 trillion of assets in the asset pile. So the entire base, what we're actually talking about is $900 trillion of assets, every single asset inside there, with monetary base that's just liquidity or make believe money, because if it goes insolvent, that entire base collapses. But that insolvent, that base is closer to $600 trillion. It's nuts. If you tried to pay back $400 trillion, if you just take the first number that we talked about, and forget the derivatives exposure and the likes of that, just try to pay that back that at $1 a second, it'd take you 12,873,000 years. It's insolvent. Just keep saying it's insolvent, and you'll start to realize the gravity of what I'm saying. Because if you're measuring every asset, not the return on the asset, the asset value from the insolvency. And the only reason that the asset value has any value at all is because you believe it's solvent and government's going to print more money. And the printing of the money centralizes further. You can see where this goes. You can see that.
It's been going that way for a while.
I know. And so everybody's inside that loop, doing more and more within that loop, believing that it's never going to end, and it's going to end. And when I say end, I'm going to describe a different way it ends. So instead of talking about it would be really easy to create a whole bunch of views here, and you put on, because that's what we live in, a car crash economy. All of the social media and everything else is say something bolder, say something crazier. And you'll get a whole bunch of views because that filter is driving, you are part of the filter. And so all of these things are feeding into the centralization, and people think there's a fix on one side or the other of the centralization, either Biden or Trump or this person or this person. Why do you think we go to war throughout time? We go through war throughout time because we've always lived in and on a zero sum game. Somebody had to win for us to lose. And then once the system gets like this, so unstable, inside your country, you have to create those people are the bad ones, we're the good ones.
100%.
And everybody bites and they pick a side, thinking you can resolve a system problem from within the system. And then how do you stay elected? Because you can't solve the problem from inside the system. You stay elected by creating an enemy outside your borders. And we always go to war to be able to resolve it. And then when we go to war and kill millions of people, we agree on a new monetary standard and we'll never do it again. We always do it again. And it starts again. Right. And we, all of the people inside it, constantly do it. So this is, maybe I'll stop there, get you to ask a question. And then this is why I looked so deeply. If this is the path, this is actually why I wrote my book. If this is the path, but we were always fooled into throughout history into resolving it a certain way, but the arms we have today could annihilate all of civilization from that path. What could we do differently to create an alternative path? That's why I wrote my book.
I'm really grateful you've undertaken this. I have a very similar, kind of general level of concern that we're marching towards a wartime, primarily because the system itself is dysfunctioning for a greater and greater share of the participants in the system. The wealth is getting increasingly concentrated and the quality of living standard is getting increasingly concentrated as a result. And so you now, especially in democratic societies, you now have more social discontent, and that's leading to more political volatility. And ultimately it's going to lead to, large scale attacks on the system itself, in my opinion.
Can I ask just before you go there, and I just like some of these statements or some of these facts, does anyone in the world actually live in a democratic society if the rate of theft in the system that they don't have a vote for is as much as we're talking about? If the productivity rate of the world today is -5%, so that productivity rate would drive deflation or falling prices at 5 or 10%, and it would move faster and faster, then where does the inflation come from -5 to whatever it is in your country? And do you have a vote in it? If you don't, and it becomes one of the most important, it's one of the most important things in your life, then do you actually have a vote that counts at all?
Yeah, that's fair. Why do you say, before even, I don't want to get too far down this path because I think we're still designing the system, but just quickly, why do you say productivity growth is essentially 5%? That seems like a...
I'm extrapolating what's happening in a true global free market, and you're seeing AI, the explosion of AI falling to the marginal cost of production and everyone using that, it might be actually greater than -5%, mm-hmm. that productivity growth. And remember what's going to happen next. All of the companies, every single user is going to use AI to provide more value. Yeah. And that -5% is going to turn to -10%. And so if you watch the mirror image of the productivity growth and what's happening, this is what I was talking about in my book, an exponential change in productivity growth. The mirror image on the other side of the system most people are measuring it from is the exponential rise in debt. And they think they're disconnected. Exactly. It's the same thing, because that existing system has to steal that much and more at a greater rate. And the output of that stealing is a centralization. And then the centralization happens and all of the top companies, which are now AI companies, become in cahoots with government to convince you that there's a way to solve it from within that system.
Centralized, right? So
that's what centralized media, centralized everything. When Elon Musk says, I'm for free speech on a centralized platform, but he's not for free speech in China because he's selling cars there, there's kind of a hypocritic nature to that, because it can't exist. It can't, whether you like him or don't like him, it can't exist on a centralized platform.
Yeah, that makes sense. So just from a technical standpoint, it sounds like in order for the governments of the world to have positive inflation in a system where productivity growth is accelerating exponentially, you have to print more and more money somehow.
Exponentially more money. When every single program that you're talking about, whether it's misallocation of capital, bigger government, right, to be able to provide jobs that are just misallocated capital, you have to stop the free market from working. You have to put trade tariffs in. You have to put all of these things. You have to stop the free market from working. You have to extract and centralize. It cannot. It's a structural problem. That's why I started with, and if the natural state of the free market is deflation, everybody's measuring that, what I just described this there, and trying to fix it from the system that is centralizing, and they can't. It's impossible.
No, I agree with that. It's definitely impossible. And so where are we headed? Like, what does system change ultimately look like? And let's just start the course from here to there.
So this is one of the things that I did when I became, As I was writing the book and as I was going deeper, I'd owned Bitcoin before, but almost, I need to learn more about this. I need to be curious about this. I was still in the system. All of my companies, all my board of directors were still in the system. Everything else was this. And it was almost a hedge and something that I looked at. As I was writing my book, I realized that a system problem couldn't resolve this conflict. And there were only a certain number of ways we could resolve this conflict. Typically, we'd go to war, and that's what would typically happen. And as you look back in history, and then you'd reset it on this. And I started getting deeper on Bitcoin to say, could Bitcoin, and I'm not saying crypto. Crypto is, just about all of crypto is a complete scam. But Bitcoin is different. And I'll tell you, and I'll go why. So as I went deeper on Bitcoin, when I finished writing my book, I had probably in my mind a 5% probability of Bitcoin failing in time. And why did I have a 5% probability of Bitcoin failing in time going back to 2019? Is I realized that in 5,000 years of human history, if we've always lived in a zero-sum game, and we always trust the centralized system to go to war and everything else, and how much power that took from each of us to centralize, then we had to be part of the problem. Yeah, could Bitcoin resolve that paradox? Could it stay? Could all of these attack vectors that came after it, whether it's China, government, mining, quantum, all of these things, could it resolve that paradox that I just described against our greater nature to try to co-opt it? That's really where it. So I had a higher bar on Bitcoin failing than probably most people I know. I didn't come in it to try to make money. I tried to come in it to say, is this really a system change? And through that work, I probably spent 10,000, 12,000 hours trying to kill Bitcoin in all different iterations. And I mean, I would love to hear something that you think you're worried about. I don't mean to be.
I'll give you one. I've been taking over the system.
Yeah, but before we go there, it'll be cute because I spent so much time on these attack vectors, like so much time on these attack vectors, because if it is a system change, I wanted to resolve that. Is that true? And so now what is Bitcoin to me, and how do I look at it in light of this conversation? There's five interconnected pieces. Everyone has a different view of Bitcoin. So some people it's a crypto, it's the best crypto. Some people it's this. Some people it says, for me, it's these five interconnected principles. It's an open, permissionless. So anybody in the world can move to it at any time. It doesn't require permission. It's decentralized, and it's more and more decentralized all the time. There's ideas that it's not, it's more and more decentralized all the time. We'll go into any one of these that you want to at a deeper level, but all five are connected. it's secure. In 16 years, there's a pot of gold, 1 million coins from Satoshi, saying wide open on this, saying any 3-letter word agency, any, come try to take me. They're all open addresses. Come take me. Right. You could kill this tomorrow. Wide open. It's like a pot of gold sitting in the middle of the street that is wide open for anybody to take. And 16 years hasn't been, hasn't come close. So completely secure. It's a protocol. Protocols are winner take all. Technologies are winner take most. We don't see protocols very often. So it would be really easy to, if people were supposedly getting rich in Bitcoin, to create other technologies and people saying the new technology is better, and us to fall into a trap of all the crypto scams. Because we would measure this new protocol from a system where people were getting rich and we were wondering, well, I got to get rich too. So it would create everything that we see around. But protocols are winner take all on the internet. If you're in China behind the Great Firewall and you have a VPN, you can still access the entire internet. So everybody participates unless it's completely blocked off, like in North Korea. So it's winner take all, and they impose a different discipline. And they come in layers, and each layer adds more and more functionality. So when people are measuring Bitcoin right now, what they think they're measuring is this price going up in their terms, in the fiat dollar terms, when it's really the dollars are going down. And they're measuring the first layer. If they're measuring the monetary standard, the first decentralized protocol, that would be better compared to TCP/IP at the base layer of the internet, but developed by DARPA in the late 60s. So as the layers increase and add more functionality, like HTTP was the fourth layer of the internet, and I'm simplifying it again. It's actually the seventh, and there are a couple changes through. But the same process happened with the internet in the evolution of the internet, and a whole bunch of competing centralized different things that all failed while they were trying to extract. So the same exact process is happening on internet. It's expanding on Bitcoin, and it's expanding on layers. And the fifth piece that connects us is it's bounded by energy. So the way mining works, it bounds this protocol to energy. First principle: energy is life. So it actually creates abundant energy through that process by having a free market. And I'll tell you why. I'll use an analogy. If you ran a bakery and you threw a certain amount of bread every day, and I came into your bakery and I said, listen, I'm going to buy as much as you could produce, but I want a discount. Next day you produce two times as much, hoping I show up. I show up. Next day you produce four times as much, hoping I show up. You're trying to sell it at your highest price, but I will always buy the extra. I buy everything. Next day you hire more people, you buy more ovens, you produce 10,000 times as much bread. I come in, I buy it all. What did we just do with bread? Having a free market, always on buyer. We created abundant bread. That's all a Bitcoin miner is. It's chasing energy, abandoned energy all over the world, decentralizing energy because their number one input cost is energy, is providing a free market for abundant energy. And it bounds the protocol to energy. So now you have, say those five things together and say, I'm open, decentralized, secure protocol bounded by energy. And from there, you can see everything. Because from there, if you're measuring prices from there and you connect it to the natural state of the free market as deflation, and you connect it to we have exponential productivity gains, then from there, then as long as that stays decentralized and secure, then, and that's the only thing you'd have to worry about if somehow that broke, right? And so we could go into that deeper too. But from there, it would be measuring perfectly what I describe in my book. You'd be living in the first global free market that ever existed. In this house I'm sitting in that if I measure it in the fiat currency, it's gone in the last 5 years from 1.4 million to 2.1 million. if I measure it in Bitcoin protocol, it's gone from 300 Bitcoin to 20 Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And in 5 years, it'll be worth one Bitcoin. So if I, so it doesn't care. This protocol doesn't care about anything in the fiat world. Every 10 minutes, it's audited. Every 10 minutes, the nodes enforce the rules. And it's imposing a discipline across the world. And it doesn't care if you want to, it doesn't care if you want to take the Bitcoin, price it in your fiat instrument to think it's going up. It doesn't care. It doesn't care if Trump wants to print $100 trillion. If China wants to, it doesn't care. It's pricing the first global free market that's ever existed. And relative to it, everything's falling to its marginal cost of production or utility value.
Mm-hmm. So it's sort of, if I can kind of summarize from what I've been following along, you laid the groundwork for why the current system is not optimal. Some of the pitfalls of the current system, how Bitcoin creates an optimal system. Can we now discuss the bridge from the current suboptimal system to the optimal system, chart that path for us? Because to me, I think that's where the money's going to be made as an investor. And ultimately that's where the quality of life is going to be had as a human being, is understanding that bridge.
So these are so connected, and you might not see how they're connected through you. You are an expression of the free market. And so if you're giving your time to the other system, so what I described before on my house value, let's use three different people, right? The cognitive dissonance of this change is really hard on our minds, even if we know it's true. Because the first thing we'll do is try to hold two thoughts that are exactly opposite and try to rectify that, but they can't, right? If the free market is the natural state of the free market is deflation, and an inflationary monetary system requires manipulation of money and a greater manipulation of money, those two things are both true.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so we have a hard time, but we measure what we're trying to measure from one system to another, and just holding that thought in your head creates that cognitive dissonance. The next step of that is cognitive dissonance is when our actions don't align with our values. So when we say one thing, we want this, but we do another. And so what you're actually describing in the path is from a monetary, from an investment thesis, but it goes way deeper than that. It has to do with us, not just the investment, right?
Agreed, yeah.
So from an investment thesis, Bitcoin's IRR for the last 15 years is 45% IRR. There is nothing. It's volatile to get there. But and even that, it's measured against the existing monetary system. But its IRR is 45%. My house that I'm sitting in is IRR in the same 14 years or 15 years is about 6.5%. And my house, and when you look at the rate of debasement, my house is going up exactly the same rate of the debasement. In other words, it's not going up at all. It's just matching the M2. So if I'm in, now let's think three different people, one person in Bitcoin measuring the world from Bitcoin, all prices are falling forever. If they're spending more time in Bitcoin, they're a part of the first global free market that's ever existed. And their work within it, adding their voice, adding their time, adding different ideas to provide better value on top of the protocol for other people, is expanding this and making it easier and easier to use for other people, making it more decentralized, more secure for other people. That's what they would see if they were all in this. Prices would be falling exactly to their expectations. It would get it, their life would be getting better and better and better. Other people they met in that system would be the same thing would be happening, and they would be seeing that. That's what I see. And I'm investing. I created one leading venture firms in Bitcoin only. And we're investing in all of this technology and and people building onto this. And if people saw what I saw every day, it would take their breath away in such a positive way. Like, so the companies are growing faster than internet companies I used to invest in, and denominating their balance sheets in Bitcoin because they're turning profitable so fast. It's so staggering as an opportunity. And why? Because they're providing value to a market that desperately needs that value, because that other is being centralized. Okay, so we used one view. I'm just one fractal of a person, and my piece of value is doing this in this world, and a whole bunch of other people are too. And it's matching exactly what I would expect from an energy-backed system, first free market system that couldn't be changed. My exact expectation. Different category of person. I need to buy some Bitcoin to hedge the currency collapse. And from their view, their Bitcoin would be rising, right? And their other assets would be shrinking in relation to their Bitcoin. A person that thought Bitcoin was a scam, and let's say a very wealthy person who had tons of assets. And so if my rate of return is 45% IRR and their rate of return is 8%, then they're losing 37% a year. And eventually they'll realize, wait, I need to have something that is a higher rate of return. And they'll start to learn about Bitcoin, and they'll move their time and energy into Bitcoin as well. And if I'm one of the people that's been extracted from, whether I'm in Africa or South America, lower class, middle class US, if I don't have any assets, I'm getting stolen from at that rate of inflation. And not just the rate of inflation, the rate of the inflation from the productivity rate at that rate. And I think there's somebody else that's creating that problem. And so when I say open monetary network, open protocol, you have so many people in jail yelling at the jailers, yelling at those people, when the door cell is open and they could walk over to a different world. So it has nothing to do. It has to do with our own, how much time we're applying to which system that is actually the fundamental change. It's a change within us that then those outcomes are so much better for the people that are in the system, in the new system being developed, and they both contribute. They're the map and the territory. They're creating creating this robust platform, their technology protocol. They're part of it, and I did the same thing. I did the exact same thing for. I was and you want a hypocrite. I'll give you my example. I talked about this all over the world. I did the work. I did tons of work to try to disprove this. I realized Bitcoin was this. And I woke up one night and I realized, and I'm speaking all over the world. People are coming after me, and all of my businesses are in the fiat world. All of my boards are in the fiat world. And I had this hedge against the system collapse that I was making stronger. Because trying to make and I could tell myself, no, I can't do it. Why we created ego death capital partially is so I could resolve that problem in me. So I could move my time into the system I wanted to see prevail, all of my time. And by doing that, and I couldn't see it before. And the truth is I was doing the same thing most people are doing today, right? So I can't blame anybody else. When I went through the same process, but from moving my time into the system that brings truth, hope, abundance, it was just a mirror reflection. It was so easy.
So I don't disagree with anything you're saying. I too am a Bitcoiner, and I certainly, even having this conversation, I'm having a new sort of thought process around, it's up to us personally to kind of get ourselves and our families and our investments to system B from system A.
Bingo.
But then I go back and here's the devil's advocate part of it. And I don't even know if it's devil's advocate. It is true. You have a lot of centralized players in the current system, system A, that are, as power slips away from them, will be highly incentivized to tighten their grip. You know, not to mention that we're talking about upwards of $1 quadrillion, denominated in U.S. fiat, $1 quadrillion of legacy interest from an asset holder standpoint in the current system. And ultimately, you have, what, 10 billion people on Earth that are going to be told and fear-mongered that if the current system collapses, there's going to be food insecurity, housing insecurity, physical insecurity. There's going to be all sorts of catastrophe associated with transitioning from system A to system B. So I guess I go back to my original question is, what's that bridge looks like? You know, because how do you go from system A to system B? It can't just be all 10 billion of us just decide to drop system A, because that's never going to happen. Yep, what does that actually look like?
So, and I can't give you a specifically, and I've said this on many different podcasts, what snowflake causes the avalanche, right? In a chaotic system transition like this, you have all these talking heads talking about the snowflake, and it's always wrong, right? And why it's always wrong is because we are the system. And so I'm just saying you can make yourself immune from that. You have to know that the amount of attack vectors coming to Bitcoin is going to be so much greater because of what you just said, so much greater than most people in Bitcoin even realize, right? Mm-hmm. But once you understand this and you realize how strong it is, and you can run a node yourself, you can be part of the system. And you can do that behind a Tor firewall. You can do that nobody knows. And they're distributed all over the world. So there is no negotiation with this. It's imposing a discipline, because as you know that and you add your voice, it resolves what we're talking about. And that's going to resolve for every single one of us 8 billion people on the planet. And it's going to resolve in their own time. What makes a system strong? What makes a system strong? Why wouldn't we move? Because fear paralyzes. Fear, and that fear is used to drive you to, you have to do this. So the system that we live in is based on more coercion, more control, more fear. And as AI does more and more work to be able to try to make our lives better, you can expect that system to utilize the same AI to make you more fearful, more controlled, more, and you won't even know it's happening, right? And so that's why I say the jail cell, that you're in it, thinking it's everybody else and it's you, and the jail cell door is open. You can just move. And what's stronger than fear? Hope.
Yeah.
So you can insulate yourself completely, and then you can insulate your family. And then you can understand, and by the way, just even in a free market, if you said naturally in a free market, the more one system exerts control, coercion, pressure, and you know it's more and more centralized, the faster the other one provides more value. So it's that yin and yang. It's that pull. It's that polar. And it's us doing it. So it's you doing it. The more time I can say this for sure, because I've seen it over and over and over again. And through my work, I've seen so many people that have come that have their entire lives are changed, like so changed, not because just they have more money, because everything about their life, they have more time, freedom, hope. They see a totally different world than the vast majority of people watching MSN see. They see themselves as part of this system change, and it's so powerful they're never going back. And so you, every person watching this podcast, has the same choice. And we have to ask ourselves, if we know these things are true and we choose system A that's based on theft, manipulation, control, coercion, everything else, then who could we blame?
No, look, I agree. This is fascinating. I've never thought about it on a personal level in terms of system change. I've always thought of it as exogenous shock makes the transition, which we know is going to be painful if we do it on a grand scale, less painful than remaining in system A. Almost like a meteor hitting the earth, right? You know, we'll make the transition to Mars if we need to, right? You know, like, you know, and so that's the way I've always thought about it. I've never really thought about it from the perspective of, you know, it's just a micro story and it just needs to happen 10 billion times over.
That's what I see. That's what I saw happen in me. That's what I saw happen in every single, because remember when, as I was writing the book, I didn't understand how this could be, this really could resolve this paradox from System 8. And so I saw it by doing the work myself. I saw how it actually changed me, right? How I changed and started to understand this, why I'm not afraid to say all of the things I thought before, because I thought them before. I was fully believing that I lived in a free market that wasn't. I didn't want to get to the couple of points here. I didn't want to, that my success had to come from somebody else. That was a really hard thing for me to face. So you don't want to face the kind of the darkest areas of what this means. And, cause I didn't see myself like that, but I wasn't trying to be, but that was a system I was living in. Right. And the more success, the more technology companies I owned or part of it, the more I was extracting from other people who didn't own them.
Yeah, that's true. This is a fascinating conversation, and I'm really glad we had you on. It's a very different style conversation than we typically have in these, but I'm grateful because it's really opening my thought process to kind of charting the path forward in a different way. I think there's still more work to be done on both of our respects on that. But before I let you go, I have to ask this question because it's something that I think is going to have real significant societal ramifications, both as an investor, but also as a human being. And obviously we're both fathers. How is AI going to impact System A from an employment and income perspective?
So the number of people, I can go really quickly on this. I just did.
Take your time. I know it's a loaded question, yeah. But.
So again, just follow it from first principles. The natural state of the market is deflation. The AI prices fall to the marginal cost of production. So AI costs zero. In the world that I describe, AI is in service of you. It's so easy. It's ubiquitous everywhere. There's no risk of AI anywhere. It's just a tool. It's just a massive tool for productivity, and the output is prices fall faster. In Model A from the centralized system, AI has to be used against you. It centralizes and has to. You are living in way worse world than George Orwell's world, completely controlled from a system that is controlling you, and you think you require everything from that centralized system. That the labor is gone anyways, right? The labor will go, and then because every business has to put it in, and you won't use the businesses that don't use it. So that's and then it's going to move into robotics, and all of the businesses you think are safe from it, that you have this AI moving into robotics, not just the humanoid robotics, but all types of versions of robotics, is going to take away all those jobs too. In time, it's not a light switch.
It's not a light switch, but you agree that in System A, that's where we must be headed because the marginal
it centralizes it all. It's centralizing it all right now. Why do you think Amazon, Google, OpenAI, Facebook, why do you think they're so pervasive in your world and you don't know? And why do you think they're in the government and making decisions on who gets elected and such, and you don't know? And you think you're have a free market inside that system that is essentially mind warping you from that. Everybody is in that system giving it more control, thinking that there's a solve as it extracts more and more of their time and energy. Just the average person, think about how much they're worried about this and worried about their kids and what kids that they, when, if you were measuring from Bitcoin and you were outside of that system, it's just abundance. It all flows to you. Government has to get smaller because it has to be in service of you.
Yeah. I got a interesting take. I know we got to run. I just want to drop this on you. I have a view that because we are still in System A, broadly speaking, And I agree with everything you say about System B, but because we're still in System A, I have a belief that AI is inherently going to be inflationary because of the government response to everything we just talked about.
Yeah, so,
billions of people unemployed.
There's so many people.
We'll all be at war all the time.
Yeah, yeah, so you have to print way more money. So there's so many. Again, inflation only comes, the only place it comes from over a long period of time is manipulation of money, which is theft.
Which is power, by the way. It's not just money.
Which is theft that comes from you that you make stronger. Right. Yep. So that has to centralize faster because it's based on theft. If you measured a world based on theft from that same world, who would you expect to win? What would your life look like? Don't measure a world based on theft. Move to Bitcoin and measure a world based on truth. And if you don't understand, if the first time you hear this, this is so jarring. It's going to take time to understand this. And there's so many scammers in broad crypto and everything else trying to take your money. But please do the work too because it's that important for you. It's that important for your kids.
Agreed. In terms of doing the work, where can we send folks to find you? Because obviously you're a leading thought leader on this subject.
Yeah. So I would go to my website, jeffbooth.ca or Ego Death Capital. If people wanted to look there or things we're investing in. I'm not on any of the centralized platforms anymore. I'm on Nostr, which is built on top of Bitcoin. So there's so many also scammers trying to say they're me on Instagram and Facebook and everything else. They're not. I'm not on those platforms. But on jeffbooth.ca, I list any social media that I'm on. So check there first if you're going to follow me on social media.
Gotcha. Wonderful. Jeff, this was a fascinating, eye-opening conversation, man. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your insights and your contributions. I think you're going to help a lot of people, man. So keep it up.
Thanks, Darius. Pleasure.
Appreciate you.
Disclaimer, 42 Macro does not provide, and no portion of our content purports to be, individualized or specific investment advice, and 42 Macro does not provide investment advice to individuals. All information provided by 42 Macro is general in nature and is made without regard to individual levels of sophistication or investment experience, investment preferences, objectives or risk parameters, and without regard to the suitability of the content for individuals or entities who may access it. No information provided by 42 Macro should be construed as an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any security or investment vehicle, nor should it be construed as tailored or specific to you or consumer thereof. You understand and agree that our content does not constitute specific recommendations of any particular investment, security, portfolio, transaction, or strategy, nor does it recommend any specific course of action is suitable for any specific person or entity or group of persons or entities. At any point in time, the employees of 42 Macro may own a portion of or all the ETF securities discussed in 42 Macro Research content. 42 Macro Research content is based upon information from sources believed to be reliable. 42 Macro is not responsible for errors, inaccuracies, or omissions of information, nor is it responsible for the accuracy or authenticity of the information upon which it relies.